Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the offense versus the Falcons, talking about that with our good friend, Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how are you doing again?
I'm glad to be here for part two. I thought part one was a lot of fun. Some good small discussions in there, some philosophical stuff that I really enjoyed.
Always love talking football with you. And we always go a lot longer. We always talk about having let's make the show 40 minutes tonight instead of an hour and five. And now we're an hour and 10 and we're getting our restart done. So it did not go as short as we expected, but that's usually because it's dense content and Jason and I get to talk about football and really enjoy it just as you seem to. So we're going to start the second episode with some discussion of the five offensive linemen who played most of the games. And those are Jones at left tackle, Voorhees at left guard, Cleveland at center, Fa'alele at right guard, and Rosengarten at right tackle. So I want to go ahead and just start off. And I know Jason, I'll make sure I'll leave you some time here, but we'll start with Jones at left tackle. I thought, did some things well in this game. 32 plays, 26 blocks, missed four of them. He allowed 1.5 pressures as I scored it. So it's not terrible for a 32 snap game. You'd like that number to be lower, but it's not terrible. Didn't have any other mistakes, which is very good. No quarterback hits. When you don't have a quarterback hit, you usually don't have a sack, but there wasn't a script fumble or anything. And he wasn't penalized, which has been a big problem for Jones this preseason. He's run a lot of laps for false starts. And in his career, if there were laps during games, he'd have missed a lot of snaps for doing that because he's had a ton of snaps in his career, a ton of penalties in his career. But 0.72 on the scoring for this game with a small adjustment for the preseason. He's right in the middle of the C range. Did have one pancake and 1 out of 2 on pulls. Tell me what you saw from him.
I saw a smooth mover, and you know, he looks kind of like the player that I expected he would be coming out of college. I think this is fourth or fifth year maybe, 2020 guy. But very smooth. He has some size. He's not an undersized, or he doesn't play undersized at least, but a very smooth mover, especially for his size. And he looked very under control to me. Like, I thought that his wins were easy wins. I don't think that, I mean, you know, I'm going to speak for you here, but I don't think you had a lot of snaps where you're like, well, did he give up a pressure there or didn't he? It was a lot of lockdown type blocks, you know, to me. And I think the one time that I noticed him getting beat, he got beat around the edge, but it took the guy, it was like a second move to beat him around the edge. So really solid, I think, performance from Jones in this game.
See, he has some decent movement skills, some ability to get to level two that we don't see out of the right guard, really. We'll get to that in a minute. But the other thing that you, just to confirm what you just said, he had four missed blocks, and those really fall into two categories. If you miss on a pull, particularly as a trailing tackle or whatever, it's not the worst thing in the world. If you get into level two and you don't make your block, not the end of the world. If you lose the guy at the line of scrimmage and you're in the process of losing him, but the ball is out quickly, that's a much worse sin. And that's why I separate those two in the article you'll see on filmstudybaltimore.com that has the differentiation between missed blocks and the number of those that were losses at the line of scrimmage. Those are the really bad ones. He did have three of those in this game. Not ideal, but I'd say, you know, if Josh Jones played at this level because Ronnie Stanley had to miss time some point of the season, the Ravens would be absolutely jumping for joy at this sort of a result.
And you're talking about like in the run game, the missed blocks, correct?
I'll tell you where they were. It was both run and pass, I believe. But he had one on a pass left for two where he was beaten inside by a spin move. I didn't count it as a pressure. He failed to pick up the inside linebacker 52 on a run move, on a run block where that ended up being part of what blew up the play. But it was for a positive play, so you didn't get you got a no negative for that. There was a run right for negative two on which he missed his pull, but he wasn't at the point of attack that caused the missed pull. That was actually between Rosengarten and Fa'alele. And then the fourth one was on a run left for one. So yeah, it was two runs and two passes. Sorry, I guess it was three runs and one pass.
Yes, I was speaking, you know, my analysis there was on his pass protection. I thought he looked very smooth. And he said not a lot of doubt in his wins to where it's like, that's a win. That's a win. Mm-hmm. That's an easy win. Wasn't challenged there. So, yeah, I agree with you, Ken. If Ronnie has to miss time or if there are struggles at right tackle and Josh Jones is in there and he played like he did last week, Ravens are very blessed. It'll be a great pickup for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just signed to a one-year deal. So he doesn't really necessarily fit into the 2025 plans unless the Ravens can find the right price for him probably during the season. Once it gets to the free agency period and everybody has a shot at him, then I think left tackles are generally overpaid for. I think the trick will be for the Ravens to try and sign him perhaps for 2 years if they like what he's doing during the year or maybe even longer to try and get him to be an asset. Moving on to left guard, move on to left guard. Yeah, the Ravens had some very bad news this week in terms of Jody. Is in the middle of some sort of a health crisis. We don't know exactly what the situation is, but you know, they've indicated that he's going to be out for an extended period to get the treatment he needs and try and recover. And you know, that being the case, they brought in Warhop to be the backup offensive, be the interim, I'll call it, offensive line coach. He's been a 39 consecutive years of coaching in the NFL, of coaching in college and the NFL, all on the offensive line, which is incredible. That's just an incredible streak. He did not have a job in 2023, which was surprising. Are you at all concerned that Warhop is not going to be the coach that Joe D was in some ways that are critical to the Ravens in terms of developing young linemen, which is unfortunately something they have to do right now?
And it's no knock on Warhop. I have no feel for him, but Joe D holds a very, I hold him in very high regard. Mm-hmm. I hold him Clarence Brooks was like that to me. Yep. I thought he was an excellent, excellent defensive line coach. Joe D has been a staple here, and we've seen guys who have played their best football as offensive linemen on the Ravens, from Orlando Brown to Bradley Bozeman to Matt Skura, who had the injury there. But you can go on and on, from starters to role players to high guys that signed high contract, John Simpson. They've played their best ball here, made themselves money here. So, you know, it's no knock to whoever's replacing Jody. I just think Jody is not being here is a massive loss, no matter who they brought in.
Right. I mean, he certainly was very pivotal to the development of a number of big second contracts, including Ben Powers last year, got the big contract from Denver. If you go back to Ryan Jensen, you know, got a big contract. And he was, boy, was he a developmental project. Started off a tackle and, you know, didn't work out there. They moved him to guard. And then kind of only by about year three did he earn the right to fail at the position. You know, you're on the, you know, really the right for a chance at the position. And then he was great at center in his fourth year. So exciting. He's always been a guy who's made me be excited about offensive line prospects for this team. And he's also the most fun coach to watch when you're at practice. If when they're on field three in particular, the fans are near this too, and it's really cool. If you can just congregate in that corner, you're very close to the offensive lineman. You can hear everything he says. You can see exactly how he's planting his feet. It's right up in front of you, and he gets in there and he does the rep for the player, and he's very particular about footwork. He's very particular about hand placement. He's very particular about, you know, how you transfer your weight from left to right or from, you know, back to forward, either one. Just exceptionally fun coach to watch. And I don't doubt that Warhop understands a lot of the principles being an offensive line coach for as long as he's been. He just doesn't nearly have the resume. Most of the NFL teams that he's been with haven't really been great offensive lines.
It's just a culture thing too. It's a continuity thing. Like, Jody's our guy, bro. He's that's our guy. And if you listen to him and you watch him work, you would think he was a man much younger than me and you, Ken.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he talks, the way he's able to articulate himself, the energy level. I mean, he's a young man. He is a young man in those terms.
Yeah, he's almost younger than me too, by the way. I think he's 67 and I'm 61, so it's not that much of a difference anyway. But he definitely is a very spry for his age kind of coach, and we wish him the best for a quick return. Let me move on to left guard now and what's going on. Obviously, Voorhees, who had quite a poor game against the Eagles, primarily as a pass blocker, where I had him scored as parts of five separate events, basically all cone invasion, cone intrusion, cone imperilment, cone whatever you want to call it. He didn't allow the hands to get on the quarterback in that game. Unfortunately, one of his very early snaps in this game was only about the fifth snap of the whole game. He got beaten cleanly by a row. Highly thought of draft pick. We talked about that in the first show for a sack. He also gave up a pressure. He got beat a third time by a row, where it would have been a pressure had the ball not been out quickly. So he got to end up getting a zero on the play. Anyway, 28 blocks on 32 plays, one pressure, one sack, ends up being a 0.63. With an adjustment, I get him up to about a 0.66. I give him a little bit extra for having two highlights in the game. That's still 1 point shy of passing at guard. There's no way I can paint this as a good game. And I don't play games around the margin where I try, oh, I got to give him one extra point so he can get a D minus instead of an F. He's on the D minus F border. That's not good. This is like an F plus game, but I can't really look at it qualitatively and say that he was much better than in that first game.
I didn't think so either. And I would love to argue with you on this and give fans a different perspective, but the numbers and the way you've scored it were reflective to what I saw on tape, and I don't score it. You know, I just go through play by play, and the number of times where he was broken off cleanly, you mentioned there, that's an issue. That's even if it's a sack, not a sack, even if Lamar gets away, it's a busted play. It's a broken play. It's a play that I don't see him being grabby, which is a good thing, to where it's just going to penalize us and take us back no matter what and be kind of a free play for the defense. But that's a good thing. But he's getting beat quickly too often, too much for someone who would have been drafted in the second or third round if not for the injury. So I'm very disappointed in, what I see from Voorhees waist down. His leg drive, his ability to really move people is not there. His ability to anchor is a little underwhelming. His ability to mirror, a little bit of a problem. I think that once he's attached and his hands are attached, you know, that's good. You know, he's got the strength shows off there, but there are too many times where I feel like he's in a good position and he wins, you know, he wins the run block. He gets his guy blocked, but he doesn't look like the strongest lineman to come out of the draft. It's just, he doesn't have that kind of leg drive. He's not moving folks, and he's getting beat. So it was very, I don't know. I'm a little nervous about this position, Ken.
Yeah, he's definitely not built from the glutes up. He's a top heavy apple shaped person, as opposed to pear shaped people. People who carry their weight like a pear are better guards. That's the shape you'd prefer to be if you had your choice. And oftentimes it's the taller, leaner linemen like Voorhees who will have problems balancing at the NFL level. So hopefully he's a guy who can learn some of the fine points that are eluding him right now. The main one being one of the real problems from the first game, more than in the second game, where I didn't think we saw it as much, is the Eagles were fairly relentless on their stunts and twists, and he had a lot of problems with that. He had a lot of problems picking up blitzes. And he did have, I think he had maybe a run miss in this game that was related to a late shooter here that he should have picked up. But anyway, I may be confusing it with the pass play, so I don't want to say that for sure. But in any case, he's had problems in terms of that. The processing side is probably going to be easier to fix than the anchor/arm length side, which is potentially a more serious problem, because that requires more advanced techniques of hand fighting and other things that Linderbaum, you know, made that miraculous transition between year one and year two. You hope that Voorhees could get 60 or 70% of that to reduce some of this pass blocking problem. And then, you know, he could probably be a league average lineman.
Processing has a way of making every single quality that you have better. And, you know, for someone who's touted as smart and a sponge, he really needs that to translate. And maybe it's just an experience thing where he needs to see more snaps and adjust to the speed of the NFL that everybody talks about. But he's not an above average athlete. And, you know, you mentioned the measurables. His measurables aren't above average. So if you don't have that and you want to be effective in this league, you better see things cleanly. You better anticipate things. Because if your body's not going to bail you out when you miss or when you don't see it, you better see it.
Yeah, completely agree. And, you know, obviously the Ravens are in a tough pickle right now. Let's talk about the other positions and then maybe come back to what the Ravens could do overall here. But Ben Cleveland got most of the playing time at center. We mentioned McCary was in there for two series. I don't think that means anything other than they want to get McCary a few preseason snaps to get him acclimated there, just in case Linderbaum is not back for opening day, or perhaps even at some point otherwise during the year he's lost, that they might need him there. It's not the ideal use of, you know, your perfect six-man most versatile lineman, but it might be what they have to end up doing. Anyway, let's go through Cleveland scoring here pretty briefly. 34 plays, 31 blocks, only missed one block, had half a pressure, and then he had the sack. I'm calling it a sack. It wasn't actually, it was just a turnover and an aborted snap here, but for all intents and purposes, it's a sack. And it's a sack for about a loss of 20, which is exceptionally bad. It's the kind of play Ben Cleveland had no real problems with the snaps. The snaps were generally pretty good. Wasn't throwing a lot of 12-6 curveballs on the snaps. They were getting in there quickly. And it was sad to see. Now, here's where it came out poorly from a scoring perspective. He had 24 points on the game on 34 snaps. That's 0.71. I adjusted that for a small degree for the preseason talent he faced it, and it still comes out at a D-minus level. If he had instead not snapped that football, just take the play out of there, he would have had a mid-level B in this game. So it's damn shame that this happened. I think the important takeaway for me is it's certainly not a good result for the game. It's not a good result for the play. It doesn't speak well to his overall level of awareness at center, but I don't think it says anything negative about his ability to play guard.
No, you know, as a matter of fact, I think that his time at center these last two games have made me more confident and more positive in my overall assessment of Ben Cleveland, which is, I mean, we saw him at right tackle last preseason. It was like, wow, better than I thought he would be. It's almost like you can just throw Ben Cleveland out there anywhere and ask him to block, and he's going to probably block the guy. He's just big, strong. He's apple shaped too, but he's got a more steady, he's just harder to go around. He's longer. You have a hard time. Like, they just threw this man out at center. And I mean, Jordan Davis was starting for the Eagles last week, and Jalen Carter, you know, two first round picks, and Brent Cleveland looked fine. Like, he was cool. It's just impressive to me that you can ask him to do that and almost ask, he's setting him up for failure, and he won't fail. Like, to me, I think he's just a natural football player, Ken, and he should be getting guard reps, in my opinion.
Well, to me, he's clearly one of the best two guards on this team, and I'm not sure who the other one is, but I'm pretty sure Cleveland is the best guard they've got right now. But anyway, moving on, we go to Fa'alele. There's a lot of stylistic things, but I'm going to start with the scoring. So he had 41 plays, 32 blocks. He missed six blocks. That included some losses at the line of scrimmage. I got to get that number in front of me right here. But it was six missed blocks. Only two were losses at the line of scrimmage. That's actually good. He had some mobility problems in level two, I'll get to. Half of penetration, he contributed to a run loss on a play. He shared that with Rosengarten. Had a pressure and a half, which honestly is better than I thought it would. It was when I'm watching the game and I'm seeing a lot of these things go wrong. 28 points for 0.69 per play. With adjustment, he's still at the D level, with or without, actually. He made two out of three pulls. He's not a good-looking athlete moving ever in space. But here's the big one. He made zero level two blocks, and he missed three in level two. So that's really bad to be able to not find somebody. I think it's a combination of factors, too. It's a matter of decisiveness. It's a matter of the plodding movement. It's a matter of using his arms poorly. There's multiple facets that he's not good at really show up when he's trying to make a block in space.
Well, we saw with Bozeman that, you know, the athleticism, there's more to pulling, climbing, all of those moving blocks than just sheer athleticism. Bozeman way outplayed his athleticism.
Yes.
He's just an excellent puller, despite not looking like a great athlete. Fa'alele, I don't know. I feel like he's done overall, you know, my overall statement on him, as it has to do with this game and then also the first game, is that I don't think that he's done – I don't know, like, he's unplayable, and but I think that he is going to be extremely limiting to this offense if we put him in guard. Like, you asked Daniel Fa'alele to down block, and he will move a guy. He will demolish that guy. You ask him to climb to level two, you can't do it. Most of the pulls, Ken, that we've seen from this offense have been kick out blocks. He doesn't have the speed and ability to get there, so his pulls have to be shorter. They have to ask Josh Jones to kick out, Fa'alele to lead through the hole. So I just don't know. Maybe it's come to a point, Ken, where they're like, look, this guy can't play right tackle. We're going to have to try him somewhere else to keep him on the roster. And I think he's done a good enough job to earn a roster spot. But I worry about him being a starter and not getting exposed over a long season.
Right. I'm with you, I think, on your discussion. I mean, I think he's a very significant limiting factor to the offense. I don't think it's shown up as bad as it could have in terms of what's happened in these two games, and certainly in the last four games of last year, when, you know, he had a 94 snap stretch, I think, where he scored about in the middle of the C range. And I was hopeful that would mean, you know, he's turning a corner, and that was a tackle. So, you know, if you'd be kicking in a guard, you think he'd be better there. Maybe it would be better there. But I haven't really seen that. And I see a guy who has scored well enough and looked terrible that I'm still concerned about what he's done. Even though he got a D in this game, he was better in the first game. Probably is at right around a C or C minus in these two games. Right now, if there's a C or C minus guy out there that the Ravens could pick up, they'd do it. because he'd be a, you know, you take that.
Yeah.
I want to respond to one other thing you said. I'll give you a chance on that, but I want to respond, go back to one other thing you said also.
No, I just wanted to say you said it better than me. It's not that he played poorly or unplayable or is losing a roster spot. It's just the hints that you get from this game that tells you that he's either going to be exposed or he's going to limit this offense because of what he cannot do and not close to being able to do in the offense. He said down block. You want him to block the guy in front of him and try to blow him off the ball or come down a half gap and down block. He can do that. But anything else, it's a hit or miss.
Yeah, with all the duo combination blocks that the Ravens run that go off guard center or guard tackle, either one, you don't get to leave Ba'alele as the back end of that as often as you would hope, which is where you think he'd succeed, by the way, because you don't want him climbing into the space. But you don't have the opportunity to do that. Oftentimes, it's a smaller player on the back end who has to keep him. And in truth, you mentioned Fa'alele's, you know, ability as a down blocker is probably most of what he brings to the table as an offensive lineman, or a good portion of it. And so if Linderbaum is the guy who's got that guy, and Fa'alele can crush him two gaps over by being the down blocker on that, then you're left with a dilemma of you still didn't get value out of right guard because he's not able to climb and find anybody in level two effectively. And it's not any one thing. It's not just the fact that he's very slow. He is very slow, but he also has an inability to be as decisive, and he's not good with his hands to make use of his size in level two. And I think part of it is going to be, you know, and I have to be careful of this when I'm watching offensive line play, is to say a guy like his size doesn't even need to get the whole body. If he can get his shoulder on somebody in level two and just kind of knock them off their track, it's usually that feels like a snowplow hitting that guy in the side, you know, where from oftentimes. But there's too much bear hugging. There's too much kind of, you know, doing things that frankly might be penalties under some situations in level two. That is like a replacement for his lack of ability to get to the point of attack or to get to a point in space.
Like for Linderbaum, for example, the linebacker might make a great read, you know, and Linderbaum's SOL here. He's supposed to block the guy, but the guy saw it coming. He's given away, maybe whatever formation gave it away. Linderbaum's able to either like dive or do something kind of crazy to at least make the guy have to change his path, mm-hmm. Which sometimes can be enough for a good running back to make that linebacker miss or to drag him for an extra 3 yards because the linebacker couldn't square him up. Fa'alele doesn't threaten you in any kind of way.
And by the way, just a last point on Fa'alele, we'll move on, is the fact that Fa'alele doesn't get to the spot in space is impairing the running back's ability to read his block.
Yes.
Okay. He can be patient up to a certain point, but you really can't be patient once you break the line in a level two. You need to be able to read that block in front of you and decide which way you're going. And, you know, a lot of that's guesswork, obviously, if Fa'alele is going to be juked one way or another because of his inability to either get to that spot or use his hands. Just put your hand up and hit the chest plate of that inside linebacker might be enough to get him knocked off the path to the running backs. Anyway, there's so much more I want to see from Daniel Fa'alele.
Yeah, and I mean, he's new to the position, so I'm going to give him a little bit of a break there, but you know, physical limitations aren't what they are, and it's another reason for me to just say, look, man, we need to go with Ben Cleveland week one. And if Fa'alele keeps practicing well and improving and Cleveland's failing, okay, that's one thing. But let's have Fa'alele active as that six offensive lineman maybe we want to bring in to just crush the end of the line on fourth and one. I could see that being his because those are the blocks he, like you said, that those down blocks. And like I said, that's what he does well. That's where his size actually comes into play, is right there.
By the way, if you wanted to look for an opportunity that's created by Warhop coming in for this offensive line, it might be with Fa'alele, because I think he was kind of Coach Joe D's guy, that he's a very hard worker, that he's got the good size. Joe D, I mean, maybe he won't say anything bad about any player, but he really won't say anything bad about Fa'alele. He talked about, you know, I asked him specifically, how do you rate his footwork and his hands so far in camp when he was at the podium early. And he said, well, his footwork's okay, or his footwork's pretty good. He's used one of those two terms. But then he had this long meandering route through why he's really not using his hands and they need to teach him how to do that. And it became pretty clear from that he was Jody's guy. And Warhop may not put up with this crap. He may say, what's going on with this guy? And I want to respect what Jody wanted to do. I want to respect what the other Ravens coaches thought about the matter. But this guy doesn't have he's not doing what we need a guard to do.
I also, man, it's even hard to bring up because of how much I love Jody. And I don't even want to talk about him not being there. But, Harbaugh said, I gave Jody the task of coming up with this starting line. So I wonder how much of Ben Cleveland's lack of playing time has to do with Harbaugh and has to do with Jody. That's really all I want to say on that.
Yeah, I could see that being both, but I think if Ben Cleveland is in Harbaugh's doghouse, then there's no amount of advocacy from Jody that necessarily gets him out. Okay, I think we've seen that with McKinney, with other players over the years, that McGaither, who they get in the doghouse and they're never getting out because their work habits are such that they just can't stand it. If Jody didn't like something about him, then I think he would need Harbaugh to kind of climb on board with him in terms of seeing things. So Jody might be the person who's suggesting that he's not getting it done. And Harbaugh is still remembering him failing the conditioning test and looking at other elements of play and saying, yeah, you're right, he's not good enough. But I don't think it would be a one-man decision from Jody. Okay. And there's another guy involved in here, and that's Todd Monken, who voice is probably about this important. But Greg Roman, his voice was very important in run schemes. And so he's what he was saying about who was on the offensive line and who was playing there, it had to influence, what mm-hmm. Cleveland was doing his first couple of years. All right, let's move on, talk a little bit about Rosengarten. And this is the little bit of good news on the Ravens line from this game. 41 plays, made 37 blocks, having for half a penetration that was shared with Fa'alele next to him. One pressure. And that pressure, by the way, really tough pressure call. I mean, it could have gone either way. It's early. It's not the one that was outside the tackle. It's the one early in the game where he kind of let the cone get intruded on. And I'll tell you when it was. In fact, it was the second play of the game. He got backed up by 50. I don't know who that is off the top of my head, but he got backed.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them. Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Up by him, and he was appeared to be in the cone from what I saw, and it looked like Johnson kind of short-armed the ball coming out. But other than that, played very, very well. I'm very impressed with Rosengarten in this game. Didn't have any other times where he let the quarterback get hit in any way. No penalties. 34 points, 0.83 per play with an adjustment. It's a B either way, with or without adjustment. Didn't do a lot in space in this game. Made his only pull. Did have a highlight, which I think was on a stunt handoff, if I recall. No, it was on a two-man block at the line of scrimmage. So did certainly some positive things in this game, but very pleased with the overall results. Much more pleased with the anchor than I anticipated being. This is the first game I've actually scored him play for the Ravens. So first game he only had 18 snaps. I didn't want to get into it and create some scoring for that uses such a ridiculously small sample size. This is bad enough at 41 snaps. We're looking at it and taking it for any serious portent, but I was happy with the way he played in these snaps.
Very happy. Very happy. You just say like the game is definitely not too fast for him. He is NFL speed. People say they got to get used to NFL speed. Rosengarten is NFL speed. He's going to have some problems this year, probably with length and probably with strength. Getting used to that part of the game, some rookie mistakes, but you cannot question his athleticism. I had him ridiculously high compared to the community. They had him as a fourth, fifth round player. I had him in the low 60s, I think like my 61st, 62nd player. So I had, Kingsley Suamataia ahead of him. I thought that Sua had the measurables and the look that the Ravens usually like. But I was not disappointed in the Rosengarten pick because I think he has outlier written all over him as far as somebody who's, his feet are more like a blocking tight end's feet, not like Isaiah Likely, but his feet are every darn good as quick, probably quicker than like a Nick Boyle. Just an excellent, excellent athlete. And really to me, Ken, I think that's all you need on the right side because Lamar can see that. So if Rosengarten's dying a slow death or, that kind of thing, or is getting a little overwhelmed, he's not going to get your quarterback killed and that kind of thing. So I really like him. I think he's going to, obviously lead the snaps at right guard, at right tackle this year.
I first of all, I hope you're right. And I'll say that the actual dying a slow death and the bump pressure and whatnot, that plays very well on the left side. Because he has the mirror and you're talking about that. He has the feet, he has the good lateral movement necessary to play that position. The anchor is the real question. It's not even the length, it's the anchor.
You know, he's a little bit shy of what the Ravens typically draft in terms of length, but I'm not concerned about that. Not nearly as much as I'm concerned about his lean, tall frame, ability to get to be as effective as he was against college linemen. You look at the national championship game; it was not disgrace is the wrong word. He got pushed around very badly in mm-hmm. that game by guys who are not NFL caliber pass rushers. And Michigan often has those guys, but they didn't have a Jabo and they didn't have a Hutchinson on this team. They had a Harrell, who was a seventh round draft pick, I think. And they had somebody else who's probably will be drafted in the future. But, you know, we're not talking about high end first round, second round talent, you know, can't miss prospects in the NFL. It was just very average guys who were giving him trouble. But they're very highly incented to get him at right tackle, see what he can do as a pass blocker, and at least that will help them make the decision on what they do for 2025, whether he's the guy or whether it's they have to go out and find a left tackle at significantly higher draft or cap cost.
I think he can do it. I think he can play left tackle, but I think ultimately if, you know, his floor is starting right tackle. So, yeah, you know, if left tackle's too much and, you know, Miles Garrett's and all that, and it's just too much of an animal, too big of an animal for him to block, you know, these rush ends, I think he can more than handle. And you know what else I like about him? If we're going to run outside zone left, I love having him on the very back end of that. Mm-hmm. Just able to mirror, adjust, change directions quickly. You know, and that's what you need on that backside, you know, to be able to just get enough of a piece of a guy on that cutback to let someone like Derrick Henry break an arm tackle.
By the way, it's my recollection. We did see a zone left play in this game where he broke stride and took a backside block.
Right. I remember that too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was impressive. That really jumps off the screen at you if you're an offensive line guy as being yeah, I like that. And he's kind of deciding on the cutback lane for the running back at that point.
But I mean, it's good. Very tight end-like or yeah. running back-like. I mean, obviously he's a big guy, but his feet are that good. And, you know, it took a lot of heat. And, you know, I'm interested to see him and Kingsley Suamataia progress through the NFL because that's going to be really interesting. They're going to be tied at the hip, yeah, at least in my mind.
Yeah, it's a – you know, I really respect your opinion on the draft. I had Suamataia higher as well. Of course, I thought they could have even drafted in the first round because they were going to have to take a reach pick either way. Very happy that they ended up with Nate Wiggins. I'm even happier now that they ended up with Nate Wiggins. But anyway, if Rosengarten, if his floor truly is starting right tackle in the NFL, you can sign me up for that floor right now. Meaning I'd take it if he was just a starting right tackle for all his 4 years with the Ravens, say.
I mean, you would take that from any second round, end of the second round pick.
Of course.
Like you're talking about a premium position pretty much, you know, and a starter. It would be like if you got a starting cornerback or, you know, you take that, shoot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, great stuff on the offensive line. Let's switch gears a little bit and do some skill position players. And if you want to talk about another offensive lineman, that's fine. But pick any skill position player you kind of were impressed with in this game. Talk about him a little bit, and I'll respond, and then I'll bring up one.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot on this. I think that you know, I'll just bring up Tylan Wallace because he clearly looked like an NFL player in a preseason game. He looked like the big dog through two preseason games as the guy that you're not going to be able to cover me if you're not a starting cornerback in this league. So safely made the roster and said in the first show, strikes me as the kind of guy that if his body holds up, he'll be a 10-year veteran as a core special teamer and, you know, that fourth, fifth receiver on a team.
Really nice yak play. Had a missed tackle forced on that yak play, and I think probably – the best transition I can give, they got him out of there early. It looks like they're treating him as the roster lock that he should be. By the way, a lot of people, including I think Voss, had some thoughts about Wallace might be a reasonable cut candidate. And by the way, you can't dismiss that because any fourth-year player is a reasonable cut candidate. The Ravens don't own any of his future. After this year, he'll leave in free agency if the Ravens don't re-sign him, but they won't get a comp pick for him because he won't be that kind of salary, not unless, you know, something really strange happens this year. So anyway, it's not unreasonable. It's one of the things you have to look for is what fourth year players might get cut every camp. But Wallace is just, he has too many ways to contribute to this team to even consider cutting him when you're bringing in players like Gage and Anthony Miller to try and see if they can make your receiving core.
Agreed.
All right. Let me go to one player who had a similar game. I think it's three wide receivers we should talk about, but let's talk about Malik Cunningham for a second, because he had three catches for 28 yards and he had 21 yak, both of which the yak basically came on the two sideline plays. He stayed in bounds. One of them, I stopped I'm going through the DVR and I stopped the thing and I was like, he's literally like leaning back and he looks like he's about to fall over backwards. And somehow he kept his feet and forced the guy to miss the tackle on the left sideline. It was the strangest thing, because you stop it. I'm going, Maureen, does it look like there's any way that he could still maintain his feet on this play? And he not only did that, he forces the guy to miss. And Q2 756, Q3 907 are the two plays. If you want to go back and look at them on your own DVR, great opportunity on the sideline. Not afraid at all to go back to the inside, take a hit, maybe scarily so, but was very effective in this game.
He's a different type of slot receiver compared to the tight ends that we have, or even Nelson Aguilar. It was very Matrix-like, his body control and his footwork, his ability to get open. And mentioned on the first show, Ken, was watching him when the ball didn't go to him and was impressed with how sharp he was. And I believe with more practice, him getting on the wide receiver's toes, getting into those breaks and then getting out of those breaks could be like an NFL strength, you know, like, oh, he's good at that on the NFL level. So I have no idea what the future holds for him. But super impressed with, you know, a quarterback looking like that at receiver.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he'd be headed for the practice squad. I'm not even sure there's a lot of even potential interest as the season starts. He might be a guy somebody looks at later in the year. And that's, in fact, how he came to the Ravens, was as a pickup later in the year as a potential third quarterback. They very quickly moved away from that. And then a conversion to wide receiver.
Right. So you don't think anybody else out there would say, hey, Malik, why don't you come here? We'll give you a shot at quarterback.
No, I don't think anybody will do that. I think that opportunity is passed. I think it's about as likely as somebody coming back to Kadir Ishmael and saying, hey, come on over and take a shot at quarterback. So, okay, it's probably four times as likely as that, but four times zero is still zero.
Gotcha.
I want to talk about one other receiver. Maybe you start us off if you want in terms of what you saw from Dayton Wade.
Yeah, crafty. You know, obviously the play speaks for itself, the little stop and go, but I mean, he can make a circus catch too. I believe that he can help you on special teams. He does a lot of everything, and you know, figuring out this wide receiver six situation, if there is one, and what happens with Tez Walker, anybody's guess at this point. Now, I mentioned in the first show that, you know, I think Russell Gage is probably got a handle ahead of all the other receivers because of his pedigree and being a dependable receiver. And if something happens to Bateman and everything else, but Dayton Wade, man, he has certainly made a name for himself among Ravens fans. And you got to figure with the other 31 teams out there that he might have caught somebody's eye.
Yeah, very possible, because he certainly has return specialist written all over him. And, you know, this year you need two return guys on kickoff. So you have to have two guys deep. So, you know, you need 64 of those guys, not 32 all of a sudden. And now players like Dayton Wade, who what they bring with otherwise is not nil, become very valuable. And I think, you know, if I look at Dayton Wade, I see multiple things I really like. First of all, very versatile in terms of his receiving. Obviously, it's fantastic that he got to show a paralyzing stop and go move on that left sideline with Emory Jones. Very easy throw for Emory Jones. Emory Jones made a beautiful one. It was right on the money. But that play was made by that stop and go move. And I think it was the cornerback Johnson on that side getting burnt. Very toastily, let's put it that way. The other thing I like from Wade is his versatility as a receiver between the two games. In the first game, he was basically in there with Leary a lot, and he caught several balls on the long touchdown drive that were all basically yak balls. He had a 1.4 ADOT average depth of target in that first game with 8.3 yak per reception. Okay. The second game, he comes on and he's got an ADOT of 19.3 with a yak per reception of 10.0. So still terrific numbers either way you go, but he's proven it as a gadget player effectively versus the Eagles. He's done it as a deep receiver against the Falcons. Just love what he's shown in these two games.
That's why the word crafty comes to mind to me, Ken. Like, I mean, yeah, he's quick. He's got speed. He's got this and that, but he just seems to like know how to get the job done, Ken.
All right. Exciting player there. Anybody at other positions you want to bring up other than the receivers we've got there? I've got maybe a couple more guys we can talk about here.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Okay. Well, I think Nick Samak changed his position. He had several good plays. They're all listed out in my article if you want to go see them from that first game against the Eagles. He came in a little earlier ahead of Darian Dalcourt. We talked about that on the first show when we're talking about the offensive line deployments. I don't want to recover that ground. But he had a couple good plays on run plays again. And he did have a lead block on a screen play. Did get penetrated through once to blow up a run play as well. So it wasn't perfect by any stretch. But I think Nick Samak is the likely landing spot for him will be on the practice squad. But I think he gives you that reserve center. And I don't think he's one of the first guys that would be gone to another team, even though he's a legit, literally a draft pick. I think the Ravens can't really afford to keep him on the roster. Last year, the similar guy was Sam Mustafa that they couldn't really afford to spend a roster spot on for a pure backup center. And then he played a few snaps at guard, but that he wasn't any good there. So he was really a backup center. But they found a way to keep him around. And Samak, I think the same thing will happen. And if Linderbaum can't go in week one or at some point during the season, then I think Samak is one of the possible choices they would move to.
Yes, I agree with you totally. Samak, I think, is not going to be for every team as a center. He's not necessarily a powerful player. His movement skills are what makes him. And then we have McCary played center well. We have McCleveland who looked good at center aside from the bad snap. So is there room for a center only on this team? To answer your question, I think that he should get a half this third preseason game with Dalcourt getting the other half and to make their decision, but to give him a chance to really show out. Maybe he gets a little bump competition there. But I'm with you on like his status on the roster or the possibilities, what happens with him.
So let's talk about what they do for this third game. You've made some very cogent points about them needing to get certain players reps. Would you be of the opinion that Cleveland needs additional reps at this point? Would you want to see Cleveland at right guard, for example, if they're thinking about playing him there? Or do you think at this point you could even bubble wrap Cleveland, start him at right guard week one, and try and see if you've got other guard depth on the roster? Because there are a couple of guys screaming out for trial games that a good amount of snaps would be a nice thing to try and evaluate what they have.
I'm open to either, it's hard for me to say without knowing what the coaches think. Like if the coaches thought what I thought about Ben Cleveland, I wouldn't play him. But if the coaches have questions to whether he's a better option than Faalele, they think Faalele maybe is better, but they're thinking about giving Cleveland another shot, then I would like to see his butt out there, with Faalele at right guard. So, I guess it just depends, to me, I think Ben Cleveland's shown enough over three years of play that I know he can play a little bit of ball.
Okay. So we want to see Voorhees at left guard for at least some of this next game. We're both in agreement on that, right? Because it just hasn't proven.
I think it would be good for him to get a half, I don't know how much they want to protect him. I don't know how hard they're going to go in this joint practice and so on and so forth, but I feel like both Voorhees and Faalele would be better suited to play a half and then have that, 2 weeks off almost, but I guess we're playing the Thursday game, so it's shorter.
Yeah. It's just a week and a half, basically. So then that leaves two guys, Corey Bullock from Maryland, who really is a guy who they probably could stand to get an evaluation game on. And the other guy, Tayshaun Manning, he spent the entire year on the practice squad last year, played very well in the preseason last year, has been not as good this year, and in fact, looked pretty darn bad, unfortunately, in this last game. I would really love them to try and figure out where he is, and you don't have to run the whole game plan around him, but make sure that there's some plays called that test him, some pulls, have some good duo schemes in there, some combination blocks where some he has to climb, some he has to be the backside guy.
Two guys I don't want to see are Josh Jones and McCary.
Okay.
They're done, man. Those are our versatile pieces. They're going to allow us to move other people around. Josh Jones looked pretty darn good at left tackle. McCary looked good at right tackle and center. I mean, it looked like McCary. So, to me, I would just leave it to the less experienced guys to take this one. I think Voorhees, I'm an advocate of young guys getting their snaps. I think Voorhees and Faalele, even though they're penciled in as starters in many people's minds, I think they still need the as many reps as they can get.
Okay, with you entirely on that. But I don't know if I can go the whole game at left tackle with Pearl there. I think you might have to leave Josh Jones out there for some period of time.
Okay, so maybe he gets a few series or something.
Yeah, and maybe even a half. And I don't think I can go the entire right game at right tackle with Saleh. So I'm really
Rosengarten, he could use some snaps, I would think.
Okay, very good. Very good. I'm with it. Then that is a real question, is whether they thought they bubble wrap Rosengarten at this point. He's obviously important to their plans. It'd be a great sign for him if they did. It would mean obviously they want to go with him in week one as the starter. So watch for that in terms of order of entry. I think another thing would be if Rosengarten plays like two series, he's getting the starter treatment this next week. So it'd be something interesting to watch for against Green Bay. All right. Emory Jones, did he move the needle for you at all with the game he had?
Yeah, sure. He showed me something. I didn't know what to think about him. I thought that what they did to him in week one was very unfair. If I'm an Emory Jones family member or, Cincinnati football fan, how the heck are you going to bring my guy in for one, desperation play when he's been standing there for 3 hours? I didn't know what to think of Emory Jones, and I thought he did. Exceeded any expectations the fans could have had for him, unless you're just, an Emory Jones fan and you watch him in college a lot. I thought he was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did too. And it wasn't perfect. It wasn't nearly as good as the passer rating would have you believe, but he threw the ball out there very well for Dayton Wade, had some other winning throws, wasn't afraid to throw the ball down the field, which I can't say the same for Leary. That was, I thought, positive. Come back to the wide receiver position. I got one more player to ask you about, and that's Kirkwood. He's a guy, all of these veteran wide receivers they brought in, Gage, Kirkwood, Miller, all have problems basically that they haven't played a lot recently, and they've all had highly unimpressive yards per target number. In fact, Kirkwood has averaged just 3.6 yards per target over the past three seasons with the Panthers and Saints. Yeah. He's played a little bit. It's only been 20 targets, but it's only been 72 yards. That obviously won't cut it, but Kirkwood looked pretty damn good as a receiver in this game, I thought.
Yeah, he strikes me as a possession receiver, and the things haven't been good in those two spots for a little while as far as their quarterback play and offensive efficiency, New Orleans and Carolina. Gotcha. But he looks like a big old tight end hybrid, big slot type possession guy. It's very strong. Wouldn't be surprising to me to see him stick around in this organization and to have a spot. Maybe if one of the tight ends goes down, that's when you bring him in. Not that he's going to block like a tight end, or Mr. Ishmael takes over at that point. But he looks pretty polished to me, Ken. Not a high upside guy, but a possession receiver in the slot.
Okay, that's where I am as well. I think that the ceiling is fairly low, honestly, for all those guys. I know you're high on Russell Gage. I would say you're significantly higher on Russell Gage than I am. I think
really? Okay. Yeah,
they've had their problems with injury-prone receivers. Gage is having trouble getting on the field at all. He and Miller hasn't played in 2 years. Essentially, Miller hasn't played in three. He looks like a much better athlete than Gage, by the way, in practice. Looks like he has a lot more juice. than Gage just in terms of speed. But you know, Gage has been a receiver who's had a lot of targets and a lot of receptions, and it's just been a couple of years at this point, and I'm not as excited about him. And the fact that he's missed time is probably like weighing on my mind more, given the fact that he's already missed a whole season. That he's you know, missing time yet again. So it's unfortunate. He got injured in the playoff game, then he got re-injured in the 2020. That was in 22. Then he got re-injured in 23 preseason, and then of course in the 24 preseason, he's already out after one target with a hamstring. I mean, just that's kind of.
It's some of the big catches and plays that he's made that just stick with me. I think that Harbaugh's a guy that likes veterans, you know, rookies lose you games, that kind of thing. So, that's kind of my gut feel. Like, I've seen Gage be a good NFL player, not saying good loosely. Like, I've seen him perform well in games.
All right. Always great talking ball with you. Oh, how about our MVPs for the game? Are you prepared for a 3-2-1?
I can do it. Do you mind if I just give three guys that stick out at the top of my head instead of go 3-2-1? I don't really have a ranking.
Sure, that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say that he may not be an MVP, but like as far as improving his stock, to me, that was Emory Jones. Another guy that gave me confidence is another Jones. It's Josh Jones. His pass protection at left tackle was really nice to see, and it gives us another option besides Patrick McCary to play left tackle for us. Mm-hmm. And then I really liked what I saw from Malik Cunningham. I know yours is probably going to be based on guys that scored the highest or whatever, but Malik Cunningham, to me, the natural skill gave me more than a glimmer of hope that he could actually be something in this league if he's given a chance.
Yeah, and he may have to get that chance via injury. He was Malik Cunningham and Josh Jones both on my honorable mention list. Dayton Wade, my number three guy, I thought he looks like he belongs. And in fact, he brings such a variety of skills that the Ravens actually need. He'd be a very good replacement for Devin Duvernay. I believe he can do a lot of the same things Duvernay could do on the field, and probably give you a little more juice as a receiver. Definitely, that stop and go move is unlike anything we ever saw from Duvernay on the field as a receiver, frankly. Emory Jones, my number two guy, and then Josh Johnson, my number one guy, easily in this game. I had a big game.
Yeah, Josh. I wasn't even thinking of him. Yeah, nice job by Josh Johnson. And I think the fan base needed to see that. I didn't necessarily need to see it, but it was good for the fan base and good for the questions, Harbaugh's podium questions.
Yeah. Rosengarten's also in my honorable mention group. I thought that in terms of, you mentioned the left tackle side and what they got from Josh Jones would be very exciting if he had to step in. I think what they got from Rosengarten was enough to really believe that he'll be the starting right tackle in 2024. It might not happen right at the beginning of the year. It might take a few games for him to get that, but the Ravens are thoroughly vested in this transition, so it really should happen.
So now that you got me thinking about playing time for this preseason game, it wouldn't surprise me if Josh Jones and Rosengarten play the same number of snaps. Maybe it's a quarter or, you know, three drives or something, and then they're out.
Okay.
Like they get the pseudo start, like not starter, but look, you're in our top 7-8 guys, you know, you're right there. You're coming out. We don't need to see McCary. We don't need to see much of Rosengarten. We don't need to see much of Josh Jones. And get that, you know, cause they've, you know, Rosengarten does kind of play like, he looks like a pro. I mean, he really does, man, to me.
The last thing I'd want to see under this condition is a player like Pearl out there, who's got a lot of technical problems to go with outstanding length and outstanding body shape. He's a guy who has a lot of problems as a pass blocker. I really don't want to see our potential starting left guard playing next to Pearl for any extended period and all of the pileup risk that can happen in a preseason. You have some players playing hard, trying to make tape. I you know, so that's kind of why I want Jones to play longer in this game. Yeah. But anyway, I could see it either way. I could understand it either way. The same problem really exists at right tackle, but it could be, you know, 5 series they play. It could be a half even that they both play if they really feel like, you know, that Rosengarten really needs more time on the right side. So we'll see. Jason, always a pleasure talking football with
Man,
you.
Man, thanks, Ken. I really appreciate you having me and hashing out my thoughts. I don't get to keep up as much as I would love to with your channel. So this is as much me gaining information, and it was really nice getting in the zone with you at the baseball game too, man. I mean, I had a good time. You got to see me in rare form. Fun. I only drink maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year. And those beers at the stadium are kind of big. So I was definitely feeling it by the middle of the game. Yeah,
at $17 a beer, they better be big. Right. As they say, they're gigantic, but they're, the longer the days, the days of unreasonably high beer prices are long gone. Now they're just, avariciously high.
While Bill is turning over somewhere, man, they threw the cooler off the upper deck when they wouldn't let him bring
it. Did he do that? I didn't remember that. All right.
He definitely did. I think it's when they said you couldn't bring beer into the stadium anymore. Maybe somebody can comment or something. But he did. He threw the cooler off the upper deck, went to the field. And got himself in trouble for that.
I remember he went from riding a bicycle around the warning track on some special fan night to basically being told he couldn't come to Oriole games anymore at some point. And it was the cooler incident.
Yeah, the cooler incident. Yep.
All right. Great stuff. I'd forgotten that. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. A lot of people have approached me about doing an offense or defense show during the regular season. Please do a short first. I want to see, what you do, how you think before the offense and defense shows, which are kind of like my babies. I'll assign you to one of those. But I would appreciate it if you do a short first. Narrow topic, always good. DMs open. Please hit me up. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.